Hello and welcome to the Social Recruiting Show. I'm of course Katrina Collier. I'm author of the Robot Proof Recruiter. He's got it on Kindle. That's cheating. He's completely put me off my game. I'm also a facilitator and a speaker. I'm of course joined by my gorgeous co-host, the talented talent acquisition professional, the one, the only, the amazing Glenn Martin, who may or may not be pulling faces.
Hola.
Hello, Glenn. This week, I am beyond excited to have this guest on the show because one, he's responsible for this, which we will explain. I'm trying not to do it without it reflecting. He is a gorgeous human who has changed my life by a weird update that he shared in 2016. Ian Pettigrew, welcome to the show. Thank you for being
welcome
here to talk
show,
strength
Ian.
With us.
I don't know how to follow that. A gorgeous human being. I'm going to put that on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. What? That should be your headline. Gorgeous human being.
I can follow that. You're a gorgeous human being without a job title. So why don't you tell us what you do?
Yeah, who are you?
what I do is leadership development and coaching. So I work with big groups and I work with people one-on-one. I don't like job title. I try to avoid having one. I don't have it on my business card. It's what do I do? You know, CEO of my own business, if I want to sound important. There's two of us in the business, you know, director, coach, don't know. But what I do
does
is lead.
Does that mean I can count two now? Now I've got my virtual assistant. Does that mean I can now say I'm two?
Yeah,
I've been
absolutely.
One for 10 years.
Yeah. So I don't like having a job title, but what I do is leadership development and coaching with people across lots of different sectors.
So one of the reasons we have Ian on the show, because as you're about to explain your background, you have zero recruitment experience. But the reason that we've gone this direction is because actually a lot of you guys, our loyal listeners, were saying we want more on the human side. So we're super excited about to talk about that. So awesome. Strengths. Actually, I should put the title up, shouldn't I? Well, Glenn asks that awesome question.
I think Ian kind of gave us a bit of a segue into it, but you know, just a little bit more detail, Ian. How did you get to the point where you now have no job title but are empowering people and teams?
I love this. Empowering, true strength.
Thank you. It's a fairly bit of a recent brand that. So
it's really bad. It cuts you off. I can't do my.
So where did we? I see. Now Katrina's trying to put me off in terms of revenge. So degree in applied statistics and computing. Worked in the chemical, pharmaceutical industry, lots of sort of change roles, strategic roles, been a developer, been a systems analyst. Discovered I was much more interested in people than I was in the technology, even though I am a complete geek at heart. Probably about 10 years before I left to do something about it. trained as a...
It's scary to take that leap of faith, isn't it?
Retrained as a coach, and then kind of the coaching and the development became part of my role at AstraZeneca, and then I was change director for R&D finance. Good job, nice job, senior role. Didn't quite tick all my boxes. So 11 years ago, I took that scary leap, exciting leap, set up on my own. Love it. Getting paid to do my hobby. Best job in the world. Absolutely love it.
Hey, so we left around the same time.
So just on that point when you made that leap, Ian, just for interest, and I think just to give people some context, what was the catalyst for that leap, and who perhaps helped you with that leap? Was it a client? Was it somebody that you were working alongside, a coach, or, you know, some sort of opportunity? What was it open that kind of gateway to you doing what you clearly love now?
It's really important to me to practice what I preach, because if I know all this seriously good stuff about how to thrive and how to have good well-being and how to succeed, why on earth would I not apply it to myself? So I was looking to the future, looking at what I wanted to do. I felt quite institutionalized, probably the wrong word, but very sort of corporate life, pension, company car scheme, everything, and actually leaving felt terribly scary. But I knew what I wanted to do. So
leaving the paycheck, you mean?
Absolutely. So tried to do some job crafting, tried to change my job to sort of fit me. Managed to do that within a degree, but then it was like, actually, do you know what? The brave thing isn't leaving. The really scary thing would be to stay and do what didn't quite tick all the boxes for years and years and years.
So it's funny. I was having a chat with gorgeous Gary Turner and watching the difference, like 10 years on, and how much the world's changed in that 10 years with all of this, and how he's now actually being able to craft what he wants within a role, which is so cool. We didn't really have that only 10 years ago. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. Or 11 in your case. Big, big. So as we're being asked what today's topic is all about, how did you get into the strengths business? And what do you mean by that? Obviously, I was trying to pull wimpy arms there before, but
so my obsession is, and I am right to call it an obsession, empowering true strength. Mm. And I've only started to call it that recently because despite running a business for 11 years, it's taken me quite a long time to find the succinct way to describe what I actually do.
Yeah.
So I've just started to use that quite recently. Right. Where do we start? There are so many people that are struggling and aren't realizing the potential and being what they could be, aren't happy in the work, are getting in their own way, are struggling with their confidence. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be like that because we've got enough resources, coaches, books, courses, TED Talks, videos. So it kind of, you know, think something is going a little bit wrong here. Mm. And we've also got managers. Now, managers should be this absolute magic that in a workplace help people be what they can be. However, that doesn't always happen.
It's strange that the three of us aren't employed by anybody.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and I can't imagine ever having a sort of job again. Gallup did a piece of research quite recently where they looked at, they took, I can't remember how many it was, there must have been 100,000 teams, and they ranked them from the absolute highest performing, could do anything, real camaraderie, could do anything, down to the very bottom, dysfunctional, didn't like each other, didn't get on, wouldn't do anything. And they looked at what the difference was between those teams, and 70% of the variation from top to bottom was explained by one factor, the manager. And actually, they've written a book called It's the Manager. So managers are really, really important. So for me, empowering true strength is about three things. It's about shifting things away from kind of learning and growth and development being something that happens on an event or at a certain time. So I think we've done people, I was going to get all wound up and annoyed about it. You can tell I'm obsessed and passionate about it.
You can be as frank as you like.
Excellent. So we do people a real disservice if we tell them that they will learn and grow when they're in a coaching session or on a course or in a one-to-one with the manager. Company. Absolutely. Mm. The magic happens when people reflect on their own and do stuff. So that's the first component for me of empowering true strength is people learn all the time, not necessarily with a professional or on a course, might be with a mate or might be with a colleague or it might be on their own. Yeah. Second thing that about empowering true strength is often the focus of development is on what's wrong with you. You know, the old sort of performance review was where your manager would look at your objectives, say what they thought was wrong with you. And what they meant there was they would compare you to them and try and sort of, you know, help you to be more like them. So for me, the second component of empowering true strength is about shifting the focus to what's right with you. Because if you're in a job and you're broadly succeeding, it's your strengths that have got you there. You know, it's what's right with you that has got you.
And imagine if we let everybody do what they're great at.
I will come back to that in a moment. And then the third component of empowering true strength is about recognizing that people are the expert in them. So, you know, I don't like blowing my own trumpet, but I'm going to. I know a lot of stuff. I study a lot of stuff. I read a lot of stuff. I've got a lot of experience. I've been around the block. I've got some sort of battle scars. When I'm working with somebody, if they say, oh, I'm struggling with this, and, you know, what do you think about that? I might be able to share experiences from different people. I might be able to share some research that we know, but they are the expert in them. I was doing a spin class the other day with Peloton, and it's Robin Arzen.
He's a little bit obsessed, Glenn. Just a little bit.
Is he?
Well, one of my favorite instructors said, right, I want you to do this now, but you do you. And it's like, yeah, you know, it's like, so the third component of Empowering True Strength isn't telling people what to do. It's recognizing that they are the expert in them, and we can work alongside and help them and coach them. So,
by the way, sorry, just to interrupt, this is extremely important. You have a Peloton fan over here, and Mr. Rob White, who has updated his username since last week.
Hello, Rob.
Excellent. I want to find a way to put my Peloton name in my email signature. That's one of my next challenges as well.
Oh, do you all network as well? Is there a social network going on with it? Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So
that encourages people to participate.
One question for you though, Ian. I think, you know, to Katrina's point, you know, we all raise our eyebrows when we mentioned manager. Do you think that maybe managers are probably getting a little bit of a bad rep at the moment in terms of the expectation level on them? And the fact that actually, as a manager, you're growing as well, right? So you're not always going to have all of the answers. I just wanted your thoughts on that, you know?
No, yes and no. So firstly, I'd say managers are people too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and managers are employees. Yeah. And managers are doing what most people are doing, which is muddling along, doing the best. One of the reasons why I focus on the manager in particular is when we get promoted to be managers. I remember when I was first given a team, I didn't have a clue.
Any training?
We train people really well to do the job, and then we give them a team and people to manage. So, and it's not rocket science. It's like there's some basic skills of management about, you know, making sure that people know what's expected of them, about making sure that you support people, that you give them good feedback, trusting and empowering them, getting out of the way, not micromanaging them, and coaching them. And I don't think you can be a manager unless you've got some basic level of coaching skills. And I don't mean being a coach or being trained as a coach, but at least being able to help somebody grow. Managers, can be so damaging to somebody. Yeah. You know, it's
We still do it, right? We still promote people up into the role and give them no support.
Yeah.
So we don't teach them to coach, we don't train them, we do nothing. We just
sorry, Glenn, can I just say I've gone into politician mode. I've started, so I'll finish.
Oh, he's on his soapbox. Watch out, boys and girls.
There's one more thing as well, which is that traditionally, even when we've done a good job of training managers to kind of be managers, what we haven't necessarily done is help them to get the best out of people who are different to them. And in a team, that's where the magic really happens. You know, the people that wind each other up when they can learn to work together, those are the people that can produce real magic. So the other thing that can be key for managers is helping them to get the best out of somebody that's different. And that means you need to trust them. You know, you need to give somebody direction and then stand back and watch them succeed in a totally different way to you. And I think that's one of the hardest bits of management, but it is when you can do that, the magic happens. Sorry, Glenn, I'll be quiet now.
No, not at all. I was just saying your point around the kind of promotion of managers, right? I mean, oftentimes it's the business promoting somebody because it's of a benefit to the business. They've gone, you're great as an independent contributor, look at what you've achieved. If we promote you into a manager role, surely all of that knowledge will distill down into the team and we'll have a team of people like you, which oftentimes doesn't work like that, right?
But it can if we then equip that person to actually do that job. So that person has now got a new job, and that's about, you know, motivating people, empowering people, helping to share that knowledge, helping to build a team. You know, managing a person is different to managing a team. You know, managing a collection of individuals is a kind of subtly different skill as well. That person, when they become a manager, has got a bit of a change job, and it is not. It's not rocket science. You know, if we can put somebody on the moon, I think we can equip people to be managers because it's not beyond our abilities.
See, I'm going to really enjoy going through our strengths week because you've made me do that.
I was
going to
say.
You know, because it would be exactly that. I couldn't think of anything worse than managing people. I'm too freaking impatient. Yeah. So it'd be good to see that come up.
Can I talk about strengths for a minute then? It's like,
can I just give a quick shout out? Hello, Simon. Sorry, I can't comment on Facebook, but can bring your comments in. So,
is this the man who does the best hugs, Mr. Heifer?
He does the best little cartoon thing. Oh my god! Complete envy.
On occasion, it's not this, but he has done a wonderful kingfisher for me as well, which is not within reach at the moment. Cool. It's amazing.
So you're going to touch on this, Ian, and I'm keen to understand this. Where if a manager's strengths indicate they should continue to be an independent contributor, what do you do then?
Then Glenn throws in a Friday afternoon 3:15 question.
It's a great one. So there's lots of ways that we can identify strengths. One of the challenges with strengths is that we don't always spot them in ourselves. Mm-hmm. So one of the definitions we've got of strengths is about, it's the three E's. They are the things that we find energizing, because we've all got things we enjoy and things we don't. They are the things that we find effortless, because they come really easy to us, because the strengths. Mm-hmm. And they are the things that are essential to who we are. You know, if we asked the people to describe us, you know, or we told them our strengths, they'd spot them a mile off. So with strengths being effortless, one of the real things that I often find with strengths is that when you talk to people, they almost dismiss them a little bit. So if somebody is a brilliant thinker and has got lots of this amazing talent, they say, oh, I just do this. And they sort of play it down because they don't have to think at it. But, you know, it's an amazing talent. So one of the exercises I often do, in fact, I did it at a big university workshop a few weeks ago, was to, when I introduced the concept of strengths and I introduced some of the theory, was to then say, right, you got 5 minutes, go and work the room, go and tell a few colleagues some things that you love about them, that you admire them for. And people look at me for 30 seconds as if I'm weird and I've just asked them to do something very bizarre.
Yeah.
And then people start a conversation. And then about 30 seconds later, there's a buzz in the room. People are skipping. People are energized. Yeah. And our strengths, even though we can't always see them, they're not obvious. They're really obvious to other people as well. So
I have
had
conversations with a lot of entrepreneurs, like saying that I do what I absolutely love, so it's actually easy for me. So I've actually created work around something that's easy, and I get paid for it, which is even nicer. But just because I find it easy doesn't mean everyone else does. And I think there's a real acceptance piece in that can be quite hard for people.
There is, but you let me get away without answering Glenn's tough question at the moment, which I'm going to do.
That was nice of me, wasn't it?
So strengths, thank you. So strengths we define as sort of patterns of thought, feeling and behaviour, that they're how we succeed. But there's a real important thing, which is that our strengths don't define what we can do. Mm-hmm. They give insight into how we do it. So my favourite assessment is from Gallup. It's called Clifton Strengths. And that's the one I've done with Katrina. And I'll be talking more about Katrina's talent themes and strengths.
That on your podcast, not today.
Gallup specifically, hang on, which way is that? That is right, yeah,
yes.
Katrina?
Gallup
specifically say, do not use that assessment in recruitment. Because, again, what you do is you would be ruling people out based on your prejudices about how you think they succeed. So for instance,
which goes well with this question.
So you might, I'll come back onto that in a minute, Simon. Thanks, mate. Uh-huh. So you might think that to be a coach, you know, I need to be highly empathetic. I need to be really intuitive. Actually, my empathy is quite low. I don't naturally pick up the signals. I'm not naturally good at that. Mm-hmm. But I am a real strategic thinker, you know, degree in applied statistics and computing. I think really analytically. So I use those strengths in my relationships with people as well. Mm-hmm. So we need to be careful. So there's something we've got called strengths innovation, which is about using things in a non-obvious way. So one thing I featured on the podcast was somebody who wasn't very good with a crowd, wasn't very outgoing, described himself as socially awkward, but needed to be able to walk into like loads of room full of people and network all the time. Mm-hmm. But one of their strongest talents was about learning. And it, on Clifton Strengths, it's the one called Learner. So what we did, we had a conversation about, well, what if you went into a room and looked at all these people and thought, what can I learn from all these people? You know, what can I learn from each of them? So they deliberately engage the strength that you probably wouldn't necessarily think about in that, and it turns them into a brilliant networker. So it's about, I could make strength sound very complex. If I get it down to something very simple, it's about being resourceful. You know, if we were doing some kind of outward bound challenge and I've given you bits of rope and some wood and planks and kind of some barrels and you've got a certain challenge, strength isn't about looking over at different people and saying, look at what they've got. You know, why can't I do it like that? Or about worrying about what you haven't got. It's about being resourceful and using what you've got to do what you want to do. The lovely Mr. Heath asked a brilliant question.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Here we go.
What if strengths are at odds with the role? The jury is out on this, and there's some really mixed views. So one thing you can try is job crafting. So there is a real argument that says you can do any job with any strengths. And actually, if you're empowered to succeed in your way, that is true. But I think there's also an ease. And actually, what you often find is that people, you know, when we do an assessment of strengths and I'm working with somebody in the job about how to be even better, people intuitively sort of tend to gravitate towards the right jobs for them. Yeah. And in fact, the lovely Mr. Heath, you know, has got a very interesting corporate career and now works independently and does amazing creative and artistic stuff. And I'd be really interested to see what sort of Simon's strengths are and about, you know, I would guess they are really aligned to what he does now. And you know, he's found a way to be that. So there's mixed views on it. I think when you're doing a job that absolutely plays to your strengths, it's easier. But you can mitigate weaknesses as well. So so Katrina's got a list of her 34 talent things.
I know.
And I'm not going to talk about them now, but these are things.
Hang on, because my weakness was the one you just said you were stronger, wasn't it?
That's not a weakness, Katrina.
High on.
Here we go. So let me give a definition of a weakness. So you've got a report that's got your strongest talent themes at the top. And those are things that if you practice them, you've got some knowledge and you use them well as strengths. Yeah. The stuff that's at the bottom, which is where people actually want to look on the report sometimes to say, what are my weaknesses? Yeah. They're not necessarily weaknesses. They are actually areas of lesser or non-talent. So Gallup defined...
My non-talents are quite funny.
So Gallup defined a weakness as anything that gets in the way of your success. So So if I look at my own weaknesses, some of them are things that I'm not very good at, but most of the things that I'm not naturally talented at, I'm totally cool about, totally unbothered by them. It's like, not me. So, I've crafted a job that I'm happy. But the other thing that gets in the way of me sometimes are my stronger strengths, where I overuse them and they become derailers, or I rely on them too much. And then occasionally the other weakness I've got that gets in the way of me is me. And it's my mindset on occasions and the stories that I tell myself. So it's not all about strengths, but strengths is a really helpful lens. And actually my experience of using it with groups is that it's a great way of helping people to be resourceful. And actually, a not uncommon thing at the end of a leadership program, when people are given feedback, and I've had this quite recently, is where somebody's want to give a sort of feedback about, you know, what they've learned and everything like that. And it's a really humbling experience to hear that, because it doesn't come about because I'm brilliant. It comes about because the people I'm working with are brilliant. And it's not uncommon to hear somebody just feedback. They're learning. I am enough. That's what I've heard people say. I am enough. And people are more confident. They find things easier. And if I can play some part in helping people to achieve that, then I'm a happy man. And I get paid to do it as well. Or paid to do most of it.
Obviously, you know my background and you know I've already done a lot of work because I've had to get to mm-hmm. where I am, like just on myself. But does it take a little bit of courage to go into the strengths thing, or do you think it's actually just like it's just like where does the curiosity come from to learn about where you, what you're strong in and what you're not strong in? Sorry, well, yeah. I'm not allowed to say weaker, less strong. More diluted.
We can talk about weaknesses. They're a thing. That's fine. So I don't tend to start from a position of, oh, I'm going to work with you on strengths. Right. So what it tends to come at with, so what am I doing? I'm using it on a few leadership programs that I'm running at the moment. I'm using it as part of coaching. I'm using it as part of a team development that I'm doing at the moment. I am giving up my time for free, and sorry, I don't like talking about stuff I do for free because I don't like sort of.
He's got bills to pay, like the rest of us. Pay him; he's best.
But I'm doing a free leadership program for the staff of Hope for Justice in the UK.
That's different.
Part of a leadership program, so strengths just becomes a really helpful lens to help somebody figure out how they can succeed at stuff. And so, when I'm working with a team, I'll actually, we agree this in advance, we talk about individual team strengths and we talk about each other. And, you know, again, it's not uncommon to have, when people are opening up, people will look at the strengths profiles and look at somebody and go, see your profile, see you. And they go, it must be really hard to be you. And then you'll see them go quiet and then they'll go, hang on, you're just different to me, aren't you? You're motivated by different things. You succeed differently at things. And then you see the real sort of penny drop as well. So I don't tend to, sometimes I call myself a strengths coach, but that's arrogant because that's assuming what people need. I don't use strengths. I use it intuitively. I don't use the assessment in all of my work, but I use it in a lot of my work because it leads on to a really positive conversation. Because we're starting with what's right with you? You know, what's brilliant about you? What's unique about you? What's special about you? And how could you be even more of who you already are?
So we talked about like the benefit to the individual of doing it. So what's the benefit to the company? Like, why should they be finding out the strengths and the not so strengths of the people in their company and their teams and all this kind of stuff? Because obviously, we're normally talking about recruitment, but actually this is probably more retention. Absolutely. Moving people around, even
I was just going to say that. So I could chuck a load of stats at you, but I'll resist the temptation.
Just intuitive.
People who play to the strengths are more engaged. We've got evidence that suggests people who play to the strengths are happier. And my own particular research area. And I'm doing the first phase of my research at the moment. I'm hoping to turn it into a PhD. I'm doing a literature review with the university that I'm involved with at the moment, is about the fact that we've got loads of evidence that suggests if you play to your strengths, it massively increases your well-being. And I want to understand more about the connection. I did a really difficult interview on my podcast with somebody who came really close to taking their own life. And when we talked about the kind of, it was Nicky Ingham. And when we talked about what could have made this a different journey, there were kind of two things I was left with. One was she'd felt really, really isolated and people had sort of left her to it because they didn't know what to say. So it's that simple, just being there for people, supporting them, asking the question, how are you today? Maybe asking it for
That's
the second
your big
time.
Question, isn't it?
Maybe there's something about that. But the other thing was about she'd been in a position where she felt she wasn't being authentically her. She wasn't playing to her strength. So, so what's in it for a company is if we can help people be more of who they are, thrive, be happier, then actually, people perform, people stay. And there's actually, hang on, there's probably less work for recruiters, isn't there? Sorry.
That's okay. Some of the in-house recruiters, including one that's asking about mugs. Hello, Mr. Cox. Well, appreciate that. I lie, he's defected. No, I think he was after Glenn's mug. He's defected to the other side. I shouldn't call him in-house anymore. Okay, so I'm going to flick it the other way. So if I know my strengths and I'm looking for a role, because you were sort of saying like, don't use it in recruitment, but there must be, it must be beneficial to someone to know their strengths when they're looking at roles.
Yeah. So I sometimes in coaching conversations, I'm working with people who are looking at longer term career, and what we can't do, and it would be completely wrong to do, is to take a profile and kind of, you know, pretend how clever am I, tap some keys and then say, right, the computer says this job is right for you. But you can use it. Yeah.
Sorry.
But
you, fills me with horror. Yeah.
But actually, you know, when I look at my strengths profiles, if you look at mine, I need time to learn. I need time to think. I need to be meeting new people. And I need to be able to have close relationships with people. And there's kind of to have a sort of close-knit team around me. So kind of as I look at my strengths, it does identify things that I'm going to naturally succeed at. But it also does identify some needs as well. And that could be one part of something that informs your thinking about
It could be handy, couldn't it? Because if you go into a role and it's like really, really too fast-paced, you're not going to be in a team, you're going to be isolated. There'll be no strategic lattes. That would be a problem, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
I was just thinking, as you were talking through this, Ian, the one thing that comes to my mind is time, right? If I'm a manager, time to assess my strengths, work on strengths. If I'm somebody that's trying to progress my career, how do I build time and what sort of time allocation could I, should I potentially be looking at to really get the full value out of either a one-to-one or one-to-many kind of session with you?
Sorry, I didn't expect that last bit. I didn't expect
it. I know, Glenn. Seriously.
For me. That was worth, thanks very much.
It's Friday. Fun show, remember?
If we tackle a few elements of that, partly about, you know, as a manager, you're really busy, you're kind of, you know, so I've got a really hectic week this week. I've been flat out, back to back, out a few evenings. I did bunk off for a morning brunch to kind of chill out and look after my own well-being. But I know I'm kind of behind with a few key emails and presentations to write. When you're in that mode, how do you carve time out for your self-development and for the development of your team? Now, sometimes we'll say, how can I find time to do that? And I find that an unhelpful word, find, you know, because that sort of suggests that one day I'm going to walk in and go, woohoo, look, it's like, look what I found, there's an extra hour.
Yeah.
You've got to make time and prioritize it. And a conversation that I often have with managers is, you know, say the manager's not delegating very well and they don't trust the team, then you end up not delegating things, or you delegate it, they do it, and then you redo it, or you send them away to do it the way you thought you'd ask them to do. And actually, an investment in developing yourself and developing the team has a massive, massive return on investment. And as a manager, that is part of your job. So I think as a manager, if you've got a team, if you're not developing the team, then you're not doing your job.
And you're going to be forever recruiting.
Yeah.
Totally.
And even, sorry, the other point on that is that I'm probably a lot softer than a lot of people, and I really wholeheartedly believe in giving people every support to turn around the performance. And, you know, I've been involved in some real amazing turnarounds. But sometimes somebody is unwilling or unable, or they're in completely the wrong job, in which case, you know, it's fine for people to part company and have those conversations. And I don't like it when I hear managers say, oh, somebody's resigned and they've done us a real favor. You know, and it's like, well, hang on, why haven't you been tackling that anyway?
Yeah. Supporting and addressing it, right?
Evan has a comment here, but I'm not sure I understand it. So if you can't understand, we'll have to get more clarification from Evan. So I hope Ian can comment on distinguishing between identifying strengths of the workers and actually taking actions to grow and develop the individuals based on their strengths, and thus the entire collective organization. Actually, I can understand now I've read it out. It was listening and reading were not working. Yeah. Not a strength.
So it's about the application of strength. So often strengths is not a different thing. And where strengths can fit in really well is as part of development programs, as part of leadership development, but particularly one-to-ones. So you know, there's a, I've got a performance role play that I use on my programs that I've actually made available on my website, which is kind of, I give a manager a brief about their role, and I give an employee a brief, and I get them to spend 10 minutes and do a performance review. And most people really struggle with it, but it's kind of, it's one that if you do the right things, you can get to the heart of. So it's to use strengths to inform, as part of the performance review in particular. Right. Mm-hmm. And I use strengths as part of team development as well, where we look at a heat map of the strengths of the team. Because, again, there can be a diversity and inclusion problem there from a strength perspective, you know, where you get somebody who's different to the team and they maybe feel excluded, and actually recognizing the way in which they differ and valuing that is a huge thing. So whilst I'm a massive fan of strengths, I don't, to make it sustainable, it's best when it's not a different thing. It's best when it's built into leadership development, team development, and individual development, whether that be coaching or one-to-ones with the manager.
It kind of sounds like you do a lot of communication work, to be fair, Ian, encouraging teams to communicate, right? About, you know, kind of how they work, their approach to work, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I created a model a while ago called the Compassionate Truth Model, just arguing that feedback is just speaking the truth with positive intent. You know, it's that simple. And I try to do as little with my clients as possible. Let me qualify that. It's not because I'm lazy. It's because
I'm being handsomely paid for it.
And it's because, where was I? It's because if I go in as the expert and kind of try to create a dependency on me, which you might think from a business development perspective would make sense, you reduce people's agency. And one of the things that really frustrates me is when I work with a team, you know, particularly if it's a really challenging team, and everybody will tell me what's going on, the truth and stuff like that. They just won't speak it to each other. Now, I could probably have a job for life in terms of facilitating that, but what I'd rather do is help them to do that themselves, you know, to speak the truth to each other with positive intent, and then I can go in and help them with the trickier bits. A lot of it is about, it's about what doesn't get said and about helping people have those conversations. And often the conversation about weaknesses doesn't get had. You know, people bottle it up and get grumpy with each other, or quiet and hope the other person figures it out, or they're rude, or there's bullying tactics. But the other thing that so often doesn't get said is that appreciation bit, you know, is that pointing out what's gone right. So it's an interesting topic. I don't normally think about it as comms, but you're right. A lot of it is about getting people to tell more empowering stories, both to themselves and to other people.
Sorry, so on our, I think it was our second trip. Well, the second trip I was with you to Uganda for Hope for Justice, when you asked the team to like do exactly that, do their thank you to each other. Oh my goodness, the room was electric, wasn't it? I think it was the last time.
And asking people, why do they do what they do? You know, what gets them out of bed on a difficult Monday morning as well? And sometimes it means being vulnerable. So, you know, in my work, I try to role model that and practice what I preach. So sometimes I'll talk sort of very openly about stuff. And about, you know, sometimes I get so frustrated with myself because I know this stuff inside out. And sometimes I might be struggling with something that I've helped somebody else sort out earlier that day. You know, it's like, so for me to be open and vulnerable about that, hopefully, kind of do my bit to role model some good conversations.
I think it's important. I think one of the things, like bringing this back to recruitment all the time, because a lot of what you've been talking about is leadership development, but weirdly, that doesn't seem to happen in the people team. The you know, particularly the talent acquisition, let's say HR, they have CIPD, don't they? But we don't have anything. So there's the people bringing in the people who aren't having this, which I also find crazy. So from what you've been saying, again, it would help them work better together and therefore hire better, right?
Absolutely, you'd be more effective. And again, there's a strengths argument that says we don't see people as they truly are. we view people through the filter of who we are. And yeah, the more you can understand about strengths, the more you can sort of get beyond that and spot it. I don't always talk about HR. I talk about sort of people that do people stuff. You know, we'll look at your Disrupt HR. It's, you know, people that do people stuff predominantly.
And everyone keeps asking me if I understand what HR does because I run Disrupt HR. I'm like, no. I'm still working it out. What do those people do? And I get they come to me and go, you know, hey, I'm like, no, I don't.
I know, but people that do people stuff, I think because we've got access to all this amazing stuff, HR and recruitment should be the most effective, happiest, cohesive group of people in the organization. And when I've said that at CIPD events, there's quite often a bit of a nervous chuckle. Can we talk about Africa?
Could CIPD get better at this for recruitment? Go MIPS.
Hello,
one
MIPS.
Of my beautiful Disrupt HR. Yeah. That's obviously not really her name, but that's what we call her. Did that buy you time to answer that very awkward question?
I think... See, recruitment's not really my area. I've been on the edges of it. I've done work around it. It's like you can do strengths-based interviewing, and I think that can be really powerful as well. So there's a lot that you can there's a lot that you can do as well.
I definitely think I get, and this will be a nice segue into what you just wanted to talk about very quickly. I do get extraordinarily frustrated when I have heads of TA say to me, I haven't got the budget to buy 8 copies of your book, but we spend more than that on biscuits for meetings and stuff like that. And you're kind of going, like there's a reluctance to invest in the people that bring in the people that I just can't get my head around when we've just had a whole conversation about the importance of the people as far as if we invest in them, if they understand, if they play to their strengths, they're going to succeed more.
And it has a big return on investment, a massive return on investment. The potential is huge.
So obviously the royalties from this, I have donated to Hope for Justice because of this man sitting in the middle. It's all
because
his fault.
Of you and how wonderful you are.
Ian Pettigrew shared a post on Facebook, I remember, in 2016, which I randomly saw and went, I'm going to do that with absolutely no clue what I'm doing that means, and found myself landing in Kampala, Uganda, with still no clue what we were going to do. However, it changed my entire world. And it was Ian's idea to take a team of HR professionals and this ring in to Uganda, wasn't it? To work with the staff and the carers of Hope for Justice, which was ReTrack at that point, wasn't it? Do you want to go into a little bit more about that? Well, we only have like 5-10 minutes. Right, we can run over a bit unless you have to go.
I'll talk really quickly. I'd spent some time in Uganda and Ethiopia previously. And in Ethiopia, I've been really fortunate alongside the staff and the outreach workers to work alongside children and homeless children and children who've been trafficked, and to do that both in the villages and in a big city as well. And I was, you know, and don't get any view of, you know, here's big, bold, brave, kind Ian going to help in these poor, starving kids. They are amazing. And
they
it's
are
a
so
real
amazing.
Humbling privilege to, you know, to sit alongside and to work alongside. And every time I sort of spend time working with the children that we help, I become a slightly better person, you know, work in progress, but I learn so much. So coming back on the flight from Ethiopia, you know, when you're feeling really emotional, you're kind of thinking it wouldn't take a lot to get me in tears. And I was just...
Oh my God, please, Colin, let's get him in tears. This would be payback.
I was bowled over and inspired by the resourcefulness of the kids. You know, kids got nothing, they've been through lots, and they're making the most of everything. They're hustling and they put me to shame. You know, it's, and I was on the plane back thinking, okay, I give them a time, I give them a money, but you know, this, we can change this. And what more can I do? And it was like, well, hang on, right. What have I learned from the kids? It's use what you've got. So I'm thinking, what have I got? And I think, I know the most fabulous people. You know, it's like, I'm one of the co-organizers of Connecting HR Manchester. It's like, you know, through Disrupt HR, coming to your events. I've just got this fantastic network of people who do people stuff. Mm. So just thought, right, how can I build on that and create a bit of a ripple effect? So we've been to, is it Uganda 3 times? Then yes. Ethiopia once, and this year we're taking one team to Cambodia, and we are just in the process of finalising taking teams to Ethiopia.
Yeah, we need more people to apply for Ethiopia. Yeah. So if that's of interest, please get in touch with me.
And so the team, you know, pay for all their own travel, pay for their own flights, take time off, raise money for Hope for Justice. And then when we're there, our main thing is that we use our skills, our day-to-day skills that, you know, it's just the stuff we do intuitively. We use them to help the staff, you know, because the staff, the social workers, trauma therapists, teachers, cleaners, security guards, managers, people doing M&E, monitoring and evaluation, all sorts of stuff. You know, they're really well trained at the job, but they don't always have the privilege to get access to the kind of stuff that, that we do on a day-to-day basis. So
what's so mind-blowing is that because they don't have that access, they take 100% of what you give them and run with it. Like 100%. They don't throw away anything. We're so throw away because we have so much on tap. And I loved going back as well from the first time where the team was kind of like that to the team being like that because they'd taken everything. And they had made Ian's little drop that started the ripple into a tidal wave, by the way. Tidal wave of change.
And to, sorry, to be with people and to sort of have them, seeing them 12 months later when you've not spoken in the gap, and to have them say, oh, right, remember last time we saw you, you said this, this, and this. Just to let you know, I've used that with my family. I've used it with kids. I've used it with my neighbours. I've taught it to other people. Now, can I ask you one question about what the next level is? And it's like, well,
okay,
you know, you'll take that any day of the week. Sorry, Glenn, I was mid-flow then.
No, I'm just curious as to kind of what are you sharing with the, with these individuals? You know, give us some examples of the sort of knowledge you're imparting, because it sounds appealing and really fascinating. But you know, I sit here as a recruiter and I think what skills and experience would translate.
Yeah, I hear you.
If we had another 45 minutes, I'd interview you all about that. Well, Katrina ran workshops on marketing and social media and how to get stuff out there.
Yeah, actually, who's listening in.
Oh, is Kat there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's on.
Hello, Kat. Kat's done fantastic things. It's kind of, again, this philosophy of what have you got that, you know, you might take for granted. So you can see how all my bits of work and stuff are coming together here.
Sometimes
that you can take for granted that you can use. Yeah. So it might be coaching, it might be management, it might be speaking, it might be how to deal with conflict, it could be recruiting, it could be marketing, it could be absolutely anything.
When I haven't felt like I've had something to contribute, because I think we've got better at this, haven't we, as we've gone on, Ian, is I've got in there and just literally done what I was told. So if Ian said, right, we're doing a session on this and you have to do this, I've just gone, okay, and run with it. But what I love about with Cambodia is we're going to be, a lot of the girls there are starting businesses. So I can talk about like my experience of doing that and, you know, coax them to do what they love. And like we've talked about strengths. So I feel I feel like I've got a bit more to bring to that one. But I hear what you're saying, which I think is why we've often, you know, look for the HR, haven't we? The teams with coaching experience and resilience. But, and
it's people that do people stuff. And given that Kat's on the call, I've been talking to Kat about Kingfisher. So
why Kingfisher? We literally had 30 seconds. Why Kingfisher? You're obsessed. Because
when I was first coming up with the name for the business, I came up with loads of garbage names, garbage names. And I was walking through a very amazing place with my wife and I was driving her absolutely crackers by saying, what about coaching this? What about coaching that? What about? And I came up with a load of dreadful names. And then we both went quiet because we saw a kingfisher and it dived in and it ducked out and it kind of, and we just both said almost the exact same words. It'll be easy to come up with a name now because we're feeling inspired. And then we like went, right. And kingfishers, if people see them, you think they're blue because you tend to see that little sort of electric blue flash on the back, but they're more orange. They're not a perfect bird, but they're perfectly designed for some stuff. They are so amazing that the Japanese bullet train, it's biomimicry, isn't it? The front of the Japanese bullet train is modeled from the shape and the dimensions of the kingfisher beak. So it kind of felt like a real metaphor as well for people, you know, maybe not what you necessarily think they are at first glance, but absolutely amazing at some things. So that's my kingfisher coaching. A lot of the work I do is leadership development, not coaching, but the approach I take is coaching with a group, you know, because back to the empowering true strength thing, I'm still trying to help people figure it out for themselves, not tell them. Does that answer the question? Why kingfisher?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and we've run right over. So we really should go, because I'm sure that you said you're really busy and you've made time for us and you've been driving in snow and everything. Thank you, Mr. Pettigrew. Thank you for this.
Thank you, Ian.
I will forever, ever look at that and sob. Next week, we have Sam from Real Legs talking about employee referrals. So that will be really cool. Another way of recruitment. We're trying to diversify it up here. We're doing very well. I'm quite excited about it. Ian, thank you again for all of that knowledge and experience.
Thanks,
I can't wait to be on your podcast. If people want to find you other than LinkedIn, where is your, what's your website to find your podcast?
The website is kingfishercoaching.com or kingfisher.coach. But if you search for on Spotify, Apple, Google, if you search for Empowering True Strength or Ian Pettigrew or Kingfisher, there's a good chance you'll find me. Yeah. But thank you so much for having me as a guest. I've absolutely loved it. Thank you.
A pleasure.
Brilliant. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for all your great questions as well. And we shall see you all at the same time next week. Have a good weekend. Bye. Thanks, Ian.
Bye.
Bye.